Okay, so I thought I would discuss for a little bit. There is a suggested sugya, kind of, that's perhaps tangential to, but it's under the surface of today's daf, of Nazir daf Yizayin, where the Gemara gets onto the topic of violating an Avera, but in a way that's kind of automatic or passive. So, for example, let's say somebody was already in a Beis Hakvaros, and he has the Eliyish idea of accepting Naziris there. So being that a Nazir is prohibited to be Metame, so if he was in a state of Naziris, he wouldn't be allowed to go into a cemetery. So what if he starts off in a cemetery? So when he takes his oath of Naziris, he's passively already in violation. So that question of passivity or activity in Averos specifically and a little bit in Mitzvos, it's a major discussion that has a lot of ramifications. And I thought I would talk about that a little bit and just look at some of the possibilities. So there are at least three areas in halacha where it seems like there's a distinction that is drawn between active and passive violations of halacha. What we would call in English sins of omission and sins of commission. And one we'll mention first, and we'll start from there, the Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Peites and Daf Tzadi. There the Gemara has a discussion about the concept, the very radical-sounding idea of Yesh Koach Bidei Chachamim, Lakar Davar Min HaTorah V'Shei Val Tas. And if you recall, actually, we spoke about this a little bit when that was the Daf, when Yevamos Daf Tzadi was the Daf. I think it was the summertime. We gave a few shiurim about that. So this is just, we're going to focus on one branch of that. So the Gemara says that this is the case. A little bit of a back and forth in the Gemara, but the conclusion seems to be that Chazal have the authority vested in them under circumstances that warrant it, that they can uproot a din min ha-Torah. And there's a qualification to that. It's already a radical idea. That this is only true when it's Shev Al Tasa, but not when it's Kumvase. So to give an example that we know fits, because this is one of the more well-known examples, that the Gemara says that even though the Torah tells us to blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and that applies whenever Rosh Hashanah is, any day of the week, which we know just because the Torah doesn't make any exceptions there. So nonetheless, if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, so the rabbi said, don't do it. So that's called Akiras Davar Min HaTorah, because the mitzvah would have been to blow shofar, but the rabbis prohibited it. So apparently they have that authority to contradict the Torah, but this fits into this category of Shev Al Tasa, because to give clear examples, and we'll see the not-so-clear examples. So here, this is a straight mitzvah, to blow the shofar, and if you don't, so then you're just committing a sin of omission. You're not doing this obligation. In contrast with, for example, presumably the rabbis would not say that you should eat non-kosher food, or violate the Shabbos, because that would be a sin of commission. So apparently they're allowed to tell you a Shev Al Tasa, but not by Kumvase. So this is one of a number of places in halacha where we seem to find a distinction that surrounds this issue. And another example, a little bit less well known, the Gemara Maseches Menachos, which is also referenced there in Yevamos, and that's what we're going to see relevant to this Tosfos I sent you, that the Gemara says it applies also to tzitzis. Because when it comes to tzitzis, the mitzvah of tzitzis applies even if you have to attach wool strings to a linen garment. In other words, that would have been a violation of the Isser of Shatnas. But the Torah says do it anyway. How do we know? It's the drasha, and it's an example of the idea of asei do chalos asei. So that's the din min ha-Torah. So if somebody has a four-cornered garment that's a linen garment, they're nonetheless supposed to attach wool tzitzis to it and not to worry about the fact that that's a violation of Shatnas. So that's the din min ha-Torah, but the Gemara says that the rabbis were oker that as well. and they did not want you attaching shatnez to this garment for the purpose of tzitzis. And the Gemara gives a number of reasons why. That maybe it'll be a situation where you'll have the tzitzis, you'll have the shatnez without the tzitzis. In other words, for example, maybe the garment will rip in such a way that it's not obligated in tzitzis. But it will still be a violation of shatnez, so you'll have the aveira without the mitzvah. Or maybe you'll wear the garment at night when there's no mitzvah of tzitzis. So again, you'll have the aveira without the mitzvah. So there were various things Chazal were concerned about. So therefore they said, despite the fact that that's the Torah law, we're saying, don't do it. So that does that fit well into this example of Sheva Al Tasa? This category of Sheva Al Tasa? So that's what bothers Tosfos. Now let's look at the Tosfos together that I sent you. So here, Tosfos talks about this idea of tzitzis, commenting on the Gemara. You see here, kulu nami sheva al tasa, that these are categories of sheva al tasa. So it asks Tosfos, v'im tomar sadin b'tzitzis. So this issue of shatnas and tzitzis, heichi havi sheva al tasa. How could you call that passive? D'chi mechasa b'talis d'bas chiyuvihi. So if you're going to put yourself into a talis, that is four corners and therefore obligated in tzitzis, ve'ein bo tzitzis, and yet it's not going to have tzitzis, so then hare over biyadai, you put on this talis that doesn't have tzitzis on it. So that seems to be an act of commission. V'yesh lomar, so here Tosa says somewhat of a big chiddush, de'bashas ituf akasi l'machayiv, that when you put on the talis, you are not at that point yet obligated in tzitzis. Ad acher shenisatev. It's only until you are wrapped in the talis, that's when you become chayiv. Diksuscha mashma sh'ata mechusaba. That when the Torah talks about your garment, its implication is that you are already wrapped in it. Sh'amechusata mechusaba kvar. You're already wrapped in it. And that's also that other language used for different drasha. So now, once you're already wrapped in the talis, and now you become the schayiv, and yet you don't attach tzitzis, then sheval taisa. At that point, it's passive. So the Gemara in Brachos, which talks about one of the other categories, as we mentioned, there are at least three categories in halacha where this distinction is relevant. So the Gemara in Brachos talks about another one, and that is the din of Kavod Abrios. The Gemara says that Kavod Abrios, human dignity, is a crucial principle, Gadol Kavod Abrios, so much so that it outweighs certain things, lahalacha. And that weighs rabbinic law, and also Torah law, in some limited cases. Which kind of limited cases? Says the Gemara, same language, Sheva Al Tasa. So when it comes to a passive violation of Torah law, we could let human dignity prevail. So in that context, what's going on there? It sounds like when a person is wearing shatnez, there it's not about tzitzis, just a person has to be wearing shatnez without tzitzis, and it sounds like we tell him that he has to take it off, even if it's embarrassing to take the shatnez off in public, because this is an aveira b'kum v'aseh. He is actively committing an aveira. So there it sounds like, mashma kishu lavish kilayim, if a person is already wearing shatnez, ve'ein poshtan, and he just fails to take them off, lo chashiv shev al taseh, that's not called passive. Ella amod v'aseh, that's considered to be a violation of a kum v'aseh. He's actively violating the Torah then. B'omiri, so the Ri says, yeah, it's not comparable. The shiny kiloyim, there's a difference in terms of the standards for kiloyim and tzitzis. That when it comes to kiloyim, ikar ha'iser b'shas levisha, the main prohibition is at the time of wearing it. Sholavash b'iser, that you put it on in a state of prohibition. Aval kan lo mischayiv ad acher shenisatev. If it's tzitzis, it's a different standard. Tzitzis, you don't become obligated until after you put it on. Kidefrishis, as we just said. So that's Tosis's basic position, but then it says, well, you have some difficulty here. Umihu kasha, it's a little difficult. Midvar chinan, what bracha do we make when we put on a talis? We make a bracha of wrapping ourselves in tzitzis. So it's mashma de b'shasa ituf avid mitzvah. It does sound like the mitzvah comes from when you put it on in the first place. There's another point that you can derive from that as well. So, that being the case, so what does Tosfos essentially tell us? So, Tosfos tells us that it seems like this would have been a mitzvah avera to not attach tzitzis to your garment or to put on a garment without tzitzis, and tries to answer it in a way that's not completely satisfactory. He tries to answer it by saying that maybe the chiyuv only kicks in once it's already on. And then there are two problems. What about shatnas, where it doesn't be the case? Well, we'll have to assume it's a different din, it's a different rule. And what about the bracha? That's a good question. We're kind of left with that question. Okay, so far so good. Tzadis Aryeh takes issue with the whole question of Tosfos. And the Tzadis Aryeh says that the whole categorization doesn't seem to be correct. Because the assumption is that we're looking at it based on whether you are physically active or passive. But that's not presumably what we're talking about. So presumably what we mean is that, do we see tzitzis as a positive obligation or a negative obligation? And there, it's presumably the case that we see it as a positive obligation. And to emphasize that point, he mentions a fascinating position in the halakha, which is significant. The position of the Mordechai, that quoted in the Ramah and elsewhere, it's in the New Days, that if somebody is wearing clothing on Shabbos, and the tzitzis, let's say, rips, so now it doesn't have tzitzis on it, there's a four-cornered garment on Shabbos, so then the position of the Mordechai was, he can continue wearing it on Shabbos. Why? Because it's not a prohibition, it's not an issur. It's a mitzvah to do it. And if it's impossible to do it because it's Shabbos, so he can't fix it, tzitzis on Shabbos, so he's not doing anything wrong by failing to fix it. So since it's a positive mitzvah and not an avera, so therefore we would allow him to continue in this state when it's impossible to fix.
So it's also trying to compare and parallel active with positive mitzvahs and negative with passive. Is that the...
So that's the issue at hand. So it seems that you have a fundamental difference here between the understanding and the premise of Tosfos and that of the Tzadis Aryeh. That Tosfos is assuming when we distinguish between Sheva Al Tassos and Kumba Aseis, that means, are we talking about active or passive behavior? So how could we say that failing to attach tzitzis to a garment is passive? It's active. You're wearing this garment that doesn't have tzitzis. And that's why they kind of have to, no pun intended, tie themselves in knots in order to try to answer the question. While the Tzadis Aryeh says, no, it's not about that. It's about categorization. This is a positive mitzvah, as we see from the Mordechai. So therefore, if you sit back and don't do the positive mitzvah, that's called Sheva Al Tassos. So this was an issue that was discussed, perhaps most prominently, by Rabbi Chanan Wasserman in an essay in his Sefer Nivamos, and also reprinted elsewhere in a section of essays called Pinterest Divrei Sofru, where he talks a lot about rabbinic law. And he poses this question, just also mentioned related to it, that this Gemara in Nivamos, which talks about the rules that the rabbis made to protect the Torah even when it overrides a mitzvah. So, for example, the Gemara says that it talks about an Orel, who somebody who converts and hasn't had a bris milah right before Pesach, and really he should be obligated anyway to do Karban Pesach, but we tell him not to. So there, even though it's a Isser Kares, or it's a Chiyuv Kares, to not do a Karban Pesach, but the Gemara says, anyway, we are going to insist on the Gzeira, even though it's a Makom Kares, that the rabbis insisted on the Gzeira that's relevant there. And there are a few other examples like that, where the Gemara says that the rabbis insisted on their din, even though it ended up overriding the din of the Torah. So it's a question, when do we apply this and when do we not apply this? So in the Magen Avraham, he quotes a question from the Kikayon de Yonah. that compares this to a Gemara in the beginning of Shabbos. That on Daf Dalet in Masechta Shabbos, the Gemara has a sugya of the whole discussion of whether we say Chatei Kidei Sheyizke Chavercha. Do we ever say that you should commit a small avera in order to save your friend from a big avera, which is actually related to what we may come back and talk about next week? So it's a little bit of a preview. And in that context, the Gemara also discusses what about for yourself? Do we say Chatei Kidei Sheyizke Atzmacha, that you should do a small avera in order to save yourself from a bigger avera? So in both, the Gemara talks about the issue that let's say somebody put bread in the oven on Shabbos. And apparently, and this itself is a whole chiddush of that sugya that has other ramifications, even if somebody does put bread in the oven on Shabbos, which is a Isser Chiyuv Misa, but that only kicks in once the bread is actually baked. So apparently, if you were to take the bread out of the oven, so then you would save yourself from this aver. However, there was an Isser Rabbanan called Radia Sapas. The way they used to do it then is they had the bread was stuck to the walls of the oven and they'd have to take it down in some of a complicated process. And Chazal prohibited that on Shabbos. So the question is, do we say, so now you're stuck because there's an Isser Rabbanan, you can't take it off? Or do we say, no, but the Isser Daraisa of baking on Shabbos you're going to be stuck with, again, no pun intended, if you don't take it off, so better to violate the Issur Rabbanan and take it down rather than leave it up. So there, it seems like the conclusion is better to take it down. So the Magid of Ram quotes this question, so when is it which? How do we know when the rabbi said that we're going to override the din of the Torah and say, don't pull a shofar on Shabbos, don't do things like that? Or here, they're going to say, no, because the din of the Torah is, you're going to violate Shabbos if you leave it in. So, in that case, sacrifice the din of the Rabbanan and take it out. So, if you look in some Svarim, they quote an approach here from the Sefer Divrei Moshe. So, if you're wondering who the Divrei Moshe is, I'll forgive you, but I take it a little bit personally because he was my great-grandfather, Moshe Nemiah. So, he writes in his Sefer, he's quoted in a few other Svarim, that the distinction is that here there was an initial act of an avera, that the situation came up because you put the bread actively in the oven first. Now, it's true that at this moment, if you just leave it there, you'll be passive. So the decision you're making right now is one of passive behavior. But it's going to concretize an avera that was started by the action that you did before. So therefore, we call that a maisa. And he also makes reference in this comment to this Shagas Aryeh talking about tzitzis. So sometimes it's a little murky. How do we call things passive? How do we call things active? So do we say that it's all based on how you're behaving right now? Or do we say that it goes from categorization? So Rabbi Chanan discusses this at length in his Sefer. And he notes that you have a pretty fascinating three-way machlokas, or three iterations of the machlokas that all come out, perhaps, l'shitaso, on this issue. And, or he mentions at least two of them, if I recall correctly. That there is a discussion at the beginning of Maseches Ksuvos, and Gimel Mibbeis Daled Amud Aleph, where the Gemara there talks about a sad scenario, that there is somebody about to get married, a couple's about to get married, and everything's in place. It's too far gone in order to turn back in terms of the expenses that have been laid out. And then one of them loses a parent, right then. So what happens in terms of the interaction of Avelis and the wedding? So the Gemara says that we allow them to proceed with the wedding first, and then the funeral is after the wedding. So now, what about the next week? So you have Shavu Brachos and Avelos. So the Gemara says they do the whole Shavu Brachos first, and then they do the Avelos afterwards. Now, according to most of the Rishonim, there's a straight path to understanding that, because we assume, most Rishonim assume, that both Avelos Shiva and Shavu Brachos are Dinim D'Rabbanan. So if that's the case, so then Heimamru Heimamru, so the rabbis have the right to decide how this should be observed. But some of the Rishonim discuss that there is a minority view that the first day of Shiva is a Din Menat Torah. Avelus Yom Rishon is a Din Menat Torah. So then the question is, so how do the rabbis have the right to say that you should observe all of Shabbat Brachos before the first day of Avelus? That's a Din Menat Torah, according to this view. So the Rashba and the Ram both say that this is an example of Akiras Davar Menat Torah, that the rabbis uprooted this din, and they allowed Shabbat Brachos to happen even though the first day of Avelus would have been Menat Torah. Now, it's parenthetically interesting, because there is a whole discussion to be had as to when this klal of Yesh Koach is employed. So one could have thought, based on some sugyas, that it's really done because there's an Aveira involved. So you're trying to prevent an Aveira, like carrying the shofar on Shabbos, or wearing shatnas and tzitzis, or something like that. Here, it doesn't seem like it's driven by that. Here, it seems like it's driven by economic considerations and other kind of considerations, so that's parenthetically interesting. But, one way or another, so this is how the Rashba and the Ran, they seem to say the same thing. They both explain that this is Akiras Davar Menat Torah. But, there is a crucial difference, which you could miss, that Rav Hanan calls his attention to. He says that the Ran has a condition here. The Ran says that, yes, he's able to have Shabbat Brachos that first week, but the first day, he shouldn't party. He doesn't have to sit Shiva and have visitors, but he shouldn't celebrate actively. Why? Because the rule is, Yesh Koach B'Sheva Al Taseh, that you're allowed to do this passively. But if he was going to celebrate actively, he's going to have a party, that would be an active violation of the din. So for just to not observe Avelus in an active way, that we can allow. But to celebrate, that would be wrong. Because that would be an active violation of the Torah. And the Rashba does not have that condition. The Rashba just says, you're Okir Davar Menat Torah. So what prompts the difference? It says, Rav Hanan, the difference is that the machlokas between the two of them, if we notice it, is how do you understand the idea of Sheva Al Taseh? Because the Ran understands it as referring to behavior. That it means you can't do active things against the Torah. So therefore, he says, you can't actively party. You can stay home and do nothing, but you can't actively party. Why does the Rashba disagree? Because the Rashba understands it as categorized. Is it categorized as a los asay, or is it categorized as an asay? So here, yes, Avelus translates into a bunch of rules of things not to do. But it's all one big positive mitzvah of Avelus. So because it's a positive mitzvah, it doesn't matter what it means in terms of behavior. But because it's a positive idea to mourn a loss, so therefore, the rabbis have the right to be okay with that. They have the right to say that you shouldn't observe this, and you don't have to observe this, and that's okay. So apparently there is a machlokes between the Rashba and the Ran, according to his understanding, of what are we talking about here? Are we defining things based on behavior? That would be the view of the Ran. Or are we defining it based on categories? That would be the view of the Rashba. So far, so good? So what's particularly fascinating is this Rashba shows up with Shitaso in a few other places. Because there is a statement the Rashba has in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Tesvav, where he's trying to define what is included in the Isser of Baal Tosfos. Tosfos raises the question that when we add Tekiyas on Rosh Hashanah, that isn't that a violation of Baal Tosfos? So Tosfos has one answer, and the Rashba says that no. If you just do a mitzvah twice, or if the rabbis were to tell you, if Chazal were to say, do a mitzvah more than once, so that would not constitute Baal Tosfos. How do you know? Because look at the opposite. There's also a prohibition of Baal Tigra. So what if the rabbis were to say, don't do a mitzvah? Would that be Baal Tigra? Apparently not. How do you know it isn't? Because we have this rule of Yesh Koach L'Akir Davar Menat Torah, that they apparently have the authority to tell you not to do a mitzvah. So it seems like that's not Baal Tigra. So Rav Hanan asks, well, how do you know it's not Baal Tigra? Maybe the rabbis were okir that too. If the rabbis are able to uproot dinim, so maybe they uprooted Baal Tigra. So why is that not a possibility in the eyes of the Rashba? Apparently, because Bal Tigra is a lo sase. Even though maybe it would be violated passively, it would just not do a mitzvah, but it would constitute a categorical violation of the lo sase. So therefore, the Rashba l'shitaso says it's not going to work. The same Rashba that says positively they could abud avelus because it's all categorized as a positive mitzvah, even though it would involve active behavior. We look at categories. So too, here he's saying the opposite. That when it comes to Bal Tigra, they cannot uproot Bal Tigra, even though it would be passive behavior, because we look at categories, and categorically, this is a don't. It's a low sasa. So far, so good?
Can I ask a quick question?
Please.
Is Bal Tosef and Bal Tigra, if I remember correctly, Rashi gave examples.
Yeah, in two different places.
In two different places, and the examples were a little different.
Right.
If I remember, they're all numerical things. In other words, Bal Tosef, the Arba Minim.
Mm-hmm. They have five Minim in him.
Yeah, and or the Tfilm, you can't, so they're all numerical, you can't add, you can't have five Minim or three Bakum in the Tfilm.
Right.
But as far as content, like Bal Tigra, lessen the mitzvah of something, I don't know, Rashi never gave that.
So idea. There's a major issue that needs to be clarified.
Because the whole point is about
right. So what is Bal Tosef and what is Bal Tigra? Is a major discussion in the Rishon, and there are many different views. And here, what the Rashba is weighing in on, if he's just telling you what isn't. So you could define what is, what does constitute a violation of Bal Tosef, for example. Maybe it's changing the numbers of something, maybe it's making a new mitzvah. Correct. Well, it depends. Different Rishonim have different approaches. But what the Rashba is addressing here is he's telling you just what isn't. He's saying that to do a mitzvah twice, for the rabbis to say, blow shofar an extra round of times, that's not Bal Tosef, because you see, it's not Bal Tigra to go in the other direction. So to tell you to do a mitzvah twice is not Bal Tosef, and to tell you to skip a mitzvah is not Bal Tigra. So apparently, this is consistent. The Rashba is saying that that's how we look at things. We look at things categorically. So I'll give you a third example. There is a Gemara in the Sechas Gittin, where, that one will preview, that the Gemara talks about the concept of Prusbel. So the question is, how was Hillel able to institute Prusbel if the Torah says you have to cancel loans? And Hillel's going to come along and say that you don't have to cancel loans when you use a Prusbel. So the Gemara then flips the question on its head. The Gemara says that, and this is one way of reading the Gemara, you'll see there's actually a big machok showing them how to read the Gemara, just mentioning one way here. So one way of reading that Gemara is that the response is, well, Hillel could do this because actually Shemitah nowadays is midrabbanan. So there is no Torah obligation nowadays to cancel loans. It's only a rabbinic obligation. The Gemara says, hold on a second, that's a problem then. Because how could that work? How could there be an institution of Shemitah derabbanan? Because then what you're telling me is that I borrow money from you, and there's no Shemitah in effect right now, so then I'm obligated to pay it back. And the rabbis are going to make a din of Shemitah Drabbanan that tells me I'm not obligated to give it back? So how could it be that the rabbis have the authority to tell me not to pay back a loan that the Torah obligates me to pay back? So the Gemara seems to have two answers to that. One answer is that Hefker, Bezdin Hefker, that the rabbis have the right to reassign monetary property, and that's how it works. And the other answer is Sheval Tassif, which is passive. It sounds like this is a reference to the sugya, that the rabbis can uproot mitzvos passively, and that's what's happening here. So what it sounds like is that, yes, I'm obligated to repay my loan, but the Torah is going to, or the rabbis are going to say here, don't repay it because of Shemitah Derabbanan. And yes, that would be considered a violation of Torah law, but it's a passive violation. I'm just going to keep the money in my pocket. I'm just not going to do anything. I'm not robbing a bank. I'm just keeping the money I already have. That is passive. So the problem is, what about the Rashba? Right, so yes, if you look at it by behavior, so fine, okay, this is passive. But if you look at it categorically, so then this is lo sigzol. So it's a violation. Lo sashok, a little bit of discussion. You see the Rishonim in the beginning of Sanhedrin talk about this. So it sounds like it's a lo sasseh. So how could the rabbis command you or allow you to violate a lo sasseh? So this is difficult according to the Rashba. So I remember many years ago I was learning this Gemara in my Chavrusa, and we brought up this question. And I had, if I may say so myself, a brilliant suggestion to answer it. That was my suggestion. Let's open the Rashba and see what he says over here. So we open the Rashba, and indeed he interprets the Gemara differently. Because perhaps it's a problem, which he calls so. That to say that this is an example of the general rule of Akiras Davram and Atoshah Shevah Pasha would be problematic, which we thought so, because it's not going to work. If he sees it categorically, rather than seeing it as based on behavior. So this is essentially the same difference you saw between Tosus and Shakasari, is apparently what's also going on between the Rashba and others. And Rav Elchanan discusses this at length. I'll just mention it briefly because I want to say one or two other things. But he mentions that this is probably understood depending on how you look at the whole concept of why Akiras Davar and Torah should be limited this way in the first place. So if you're going to give the rabbis this massive power to uproot Torah law, so then why stop there? Why do we say that it's only Sheva Al Tasa? Why don't we say the whole shebang? They can rewrite the Torah however they want. So he has a very elaborate structure to explain this, but just to borrow a part of it, because presumably it depends on how you understand what's going on. That why should it be limited? So either it should be limited because what we think is happening is that the rabbis are actually removing the din from the Torah, like the language found. Akiras Davar min HaTorah. So that's pretty radical. So if that's the case, so then maybe there's a limitation depending on severity. That we have a tradition that mitzvahs lo saseh are more severe than mitzvah saseh, as indicated by the fact that lo saseh generally have punishments attached to them, and mitzvah saseh usually do not. So therefore, if that's the case, so maybe that shows you that there's a greater severity to lo saseh, and maybe that's why we have this policy. And if that's the case, so then how do we define it? We define it categorically. Is it based on, is it a lo saseh or is it an aseh? Alternatively, you could say differently. You could say that the rabbis are not really uprooting a din HaTorah. That's not possible. They can't rewrite the Torah. All yesh koach means, despite the dramatic language, but what it really means practically, is that they have authority to legislate, even though it's going to bump up against the Torah. So when the Torah says, blow shofar, on Rosh Hashanah, whatever day it is, and the rabbis say, no, don't, because you might come to carry it, the Torah's mitzvah doesn't disappear. It's still there. But the rabbis are able to legislate against it and to say, ignore it. So if that's the case, you have two things still in existence that are up against each other. So how do you resolve this irresolvable conflict? So the best policy, when you can't win either way, is Sheva Al Tasa Adif. That's put your head low. Keep your head low. Stay out of it. So at least you're not actively, blatantly offending one source or the other. So you can't really satisfy both, but if you don't do anything, so at least you're keeping your head out of the fire. So maybe that's what's going on. That it's about the fact that there's now a conflict between Torah law and rabbinic law, and therefore the policy is act passively. So if that's the case, it says, so then how would you define what is in one category and what is in the next? Then it's based on behavior. Now it's about literally Sheva Al Tasa, about what you don't do. There's a lot more to say about this. I'll just quickly note that this comes up, as you mentioned, in these two other places, maybe more. That's a lot more. But one question mentioned Kavod Abriot. So the Gemara says that if there is a passive violation of Torah law, we may allow that for purposes of Kavod Abriot. So Tosfos in the Masechta Shavuos discusses, so why is it, let's say you have a Beis Din that needs to clarify something, and they are apparently allowed to summon to testify even Dayanim, judges from a much higher Beis Din, which would seem to be a compromising of their dignity, to come and testify in front of a lower court would seem to be a reduction in their kavod. Now, we're not talking about the defendants, that would be a different story, but if they're the witnesses, so Tosfos asks, why should they have to testify if this is a violation of their kavod? And if they would just stay home, so that would be passive, that would be Sheva Al Tasa, so let them just stay home.
Even though it's a mitzvah.
Right. But maybe it's a passive violation, Shei Bal Tasa, and covered up real friends. So they're covered and being compromised. So let them just stay home, passively. So Tosfos has two answers here. One answer is that maybe whatever needs to be clarified involves an active transgression from someone else. So yes, these witnesses will be passive, but it's going to lead to an active violation of Torah law. While the other answer in Tosfos is that it's not actually really a Kavod HaBrios situation. That Kavod HaBrios, when we say Kavod HaBrios outweighs Torah law, that means it's a significant assault on Kavod HaBrios, what Tosfos calls a Gnai Gadol. But here, this isn't a humiliation. This is just a lack of protocol. This is just, it's not the normal standing, but it's not really being humiliated. So that's, this is a Gnai Katan. So that we wouldn't say we would apply the rule of Kavod HaBrios. So this also gets involved in figuring out what's called active and what's called passive. Is it called active if you're passive but somebody else is going to be caused to do something active? Or do we say, no, it's still called passive? So those 2 days in Tosfos are probably relevant to this, and the Stipler and the Sefer Shavuos has a discussion along these same lines where he talks about how to define active and passive for the purpose of Kavod HaBrios. Just to mention quickly a third area where this comes up, just to take note of. So here, it's a little bit complicated to assume that it's in the category of the first two, because first of all, the language is different, but also it's not found in the Talmud directly. This is something that comes really from later sources, but still now gets brought into this whole discussion. That the Gemara in Maseches Ksuvos and Daf Nun says that there's a limit to how much shtaka one should give. And we don't want to become impoverished. So, therefore, Hamavazve is Al Yavazve is Dosim Yechomesh. A person, when he's considering how much shtaka to give, he shouldn't give more than a fifth of his money to shtaka. And Ramah in Hilchos Lulav says a Chiddush, quoting from the Shoni, that that's true also by mitzvos. When it comes to a mitzvah, so you're not obligated to spend all your money in order to do a mitzvah, you only have to spend one-fifth of your money. But then, he quotes there as well, that there's a distinction, that that's assuming it's a positive mitzvah. So a positive mitzvah is a limit to how far you have to go. But if it's an avera, then kol hon beso. Then you have to spend everything. If you have to be Michal Shabbos, let's say.
Spend money?
Let's say to save money. Wow. If situations come up, you have to.
You would take a job, you would have had to work on Shabbos.
Yeah, that actually discussed in the postgame. But any kind of situation where, in order to save your house. That's the Ramah quotes.
You don't spend more than 20%.
For Aseh, you don't spend more than
20%. For Aseh,
you'd have to spend everything. Now, there were some who disagreed, so just to connect this little synergy, so when we learned Brachos recently, so the Vilna Gaon disagreed, because he thought the Mishnah in the last parak of Brachos, the last thing that we learned, so there it says that, and the Mishnah understands, that even everything, you have to spend everything. But the Gra says, so that's talking about Avodah Zarah. So it's apparently Avodah Zarah has that standard. But a normal Loso say wouldn't necessarily have that standard. So not everyone agreed with the Ramah, but that's taken to be the case, that there is this distinction, positive mitzvahs only a fifth, and negative mitzvahs everything. So what falls into what category was the discussion. And it comes out along the same kind of terms. Do we say that it's defined by your behavior, or it's defined by your categorizing. So, for example, the Chavetz Chaim writes that one is not obligated to spend all his money in order not to violate lo salin de blasal. If somebody passes away, they're supposed to be buried right away, but that would be a passive neglect if they waited in order to, say, save an expense. But say it's a lo sase, lo salin. So the Chavetz Chaim is assuming that we don't look at it as a lo sase, we look at it as behavior, and the behavior is passive. So there are really many examples of this. Chronim have a discussion in general, which the truth is you'll need a better answer to this anyway. They say, let's say if somebody comes and asks you, they're trying to raise money because a person needs surgery. And if you don't give them the surgery, they're going to die. So then presumably you should be obligated to give all of your money because there's an Isser in the Torah of Lo Samar Al Dam Re'acha. So why don't we say that's a Lo Sase? You should be obligated to sell your house, to whatever it is, in order not to violate the Lo Sase. So there also, the suggestion is that it's treated as an Ase because it involves behavior. It's complicated though because people don't give a fifth of their money for that either. So presumably there's more to the answer. But the question also draws upon this issue. So that was a major discussion in that area, and Rivash was machmer on this, that we just look categorically. Others suggested that we look at behavior. It also goes to the question of what's the issue? Why are we distinguishing like that in the first place? So the Levush understood that it's because of the severity, because of the Chumras HaIsser that comes with the Lo Sase. While the Tari Tamima writes that it's about the visibility, that when you violate something actively, so then it's a clear problem, it's a Chil Hashem, we can see it, so that's what creates the bigger issue. So again, it goes back to the question of whether we see things categorically or whether we see it as behavior. And I'll just close by noting that some raise the question that the whole assumption that Lo Sase's are more Chumar, that there's a greater severity to them. So that's understandable. In general, in secular law, you would think that's true also. A sin of commission is worse than a sin of omission. But it's also proven halachically by the fact that there's generally an onesh for aseh, for los aseh, most of the time. And for mitzvah saseh, you usually don't have an onesh. So since we generally measure the severity of an iser by the onesh, so then presumably whatever has an onesh is more chumra than whatever doesn't have an onesh. So that would put pretty much most of the Losa says in a category of greater severity than most of the Ases. So some ask, so what about the rule of Ase Docha Losa say? That if there's a clash between two, we have to pick one or the other. So the Gemara says, within a whole list of exceptions, but as the default rule, we say that we do the Ase and we override the Losa say. And the Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, the Ramban says that's because Lo Sases reflect the value of Yiras Shamayim. You have reverence for God, so you don't go against the Torah. While Mitzvah Saseh reflect Ava. So Ava is more powerful than Yiras. So if you have a choice of whether to express Ava or express Yiras, so then we prefer to express Ava. So if Lo Sases are more Chumar, so then why don't we say we should pay more attention to the Lo Sases? So one paper that talks about that is a paper called Shela Shol, written by Shol Breish, who is the son of Chofetz Yaakov of Switzerland. And he says, it's not really a theorem, because it's all the same idea. That we're saying that yes, to violate a Lo Sases is worse than to not violate a mitzvah. But that means that it's even more impressive to do a positive mitzvah than it is to abstain from an aveira. Abstaining from an aveira, that we'd expect everyone to do. That's really the basic minimum. But to do a mitzvah, that's more of an impressive action. That's what we mean. That the ava outweighs the ira, so that's why I say it's also the losa. So it's all basically on one continuum. All right, so there's much more to say about this, but we could either actively or passively keep you here all night, so we'll stop here. Yashikoach.